And now I'd really like to kick off our main event for the day. It's really a pleasure for me to introduce Pastor Tim Wright here. He has come all the way from Phoenix, Arizona, and we're just, it's a real treat. We're glad that it wasn't last weekend that he would have gotten a real taste. But he does know and understand this. He's actually from the Twin Cities, and so he's very familiar with that. But he's definitely converted. He's no longer a Vikings fan. I watch him in church, and he wears this Arizona Cardinal jersey all the time. So we'll have to deal with that. But Pastor Wright, he's been a Lutheran pastor since 1984. He currently serves as the pastor of Community Grace out in Peoria, Arizona. That's where I got to know him. That's Kim and I attended there for a number of years while we had a place out in Peoria, and just thoroughly enjoyed always listening to him, and we still listen to him all the time online. That's the great thing about technology, is we never have to miss one of his messages, and we catch virtually every week. But he's used the latest in brain science research, best practices, and most particularly biblical insights are really around how we can help both boys and girls really thrive in an increasingly challenging world. And Tim has written a number of books, including Searching for Tom Sawyer, How Parents and Congregations Can Stop the Exodus of Boys from Church, and also an e-book of Sunday Schooling Our Kids Out of Church. I've read that one and the Tom Sawyer book, and they're both outstanding books and very helpful on raising Christian boys. So without any further ado, it is really my pleasure to introduce to you Pastor Tim Wright.
Thank you very, very much, Mark, and thank you all for coming. This is my brother Jeff, by the way, and he's going to run everything for me today. And because he's my brother, he also grew up in Minneapolis, Minnesota. The two of us and our siblings grew up in St. Louis Park, Minnesota. And we have been in, I've been in Arizona now for 34 years, so I think I actually got frostbite walking all the way from the Hampton over here. It's freezing out. You're all, you know, thinking it's nice and warm. We were freezing this morning. So our blood has thinned a lot. Just a little bit about myself, and then we'll dive in the topic for today. I have been a pastor for 34 years in the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America. My wife and I met when we were in high school. We went to a Christian school in Minneapolis called Minnehaha Academy. We met there, and we have been married 39 years coming up in August. Our firstborn is a girl, a daughter. She was our world traveler. One of her passions was human rights, particularly for women. And so she studied, a lot of her schooling was done in England, which meant that Jan and I had to go back and forth to England all the time. It was horrible to have to travel overseas and see her. And she got a law degree through the University of Minnesota, and then put all that good work to use working for me in our church, doing our missions work. And she and her husband have a son and a daughter. My son is he started his own business. He and his two of his buddies do a fantasy football podcast, and they are making bank. He just paid off his house talking about fake football. It's just a different world than I live in, and he's doing really, really well. He and his wife have three children, a daughter and two sons, and he just informed me that he bought his Kirk Cousins jersey and is now converted to the Minnesota Vikings. Yeah. Sad. Vikings are my second team, but I've converted to the Cardinals. What we're going to talk about today... tomorrow we're going to be doing an all-day seminar on boys, and it's not that girls don't matter, it's just that nobody's really talking about the crisis our boys are in. We talk a lot about our daughters, a lot about our girls. I'm going to spend some time talking about our girls today, spend some time talking about our boys as well. What I want to do is just give you the 30,000-foot view. And so we're going to talk a little bit about girls, how their brains work, and some gifts that our daughters need. And then we'll do the same with our boys. And the boy part will give you a little sense of what we'll be talking about tomorrow in the Helping Christian Boys Thrive Summit. How many of you raised a daughter or are raising a daughter? All right. How many of you have raised a son or are raising sons? Very, very good. So almost everybody here has a boy or a girl in your family somewhere, or nieces, nephews, and so on. So hopefully this will all be pertinent for us. And before we dive in, let's just have a quick word of prayer together. Heavenly Father, as we talk about these really important things, and particularly these very important people in our lives, our boys and our girls, I pray that you would open up our hearts and our minds to some new things, some gifts that we can give to our girls, some gifts that we can give to our boys that will help them become the women, the men that you created them to be. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. So I want to start with girls, and what we're going to talk about today, essentially, is how to build grit, how to build resiliency in our boys and in our girls. And we start with girls. And as I mentioned, I'm the father of a daughter, have been for 38 years, and she and I have always had a really close relationship. We're both firstborns, we're both strong-headed, and so we love each other, and we fight passionately when we fight. And then I've got two granddaughters, and Clover is 9, and Matilda is 3, just turned 3. And so it's been a real privilege for me to watch my daughter grow and now to watch my granddaughters grow. And I want to give you some things about boys and girls that hopefully will be helpful for you. Let me set the stage here with a little story. There was a boy who was, he lived out in the country, and he was about 8 years old, and he decided that he wanted to walk home from church Sunday morning. And, you know, there wasn't a lot of ways that he could get lost. His parents said, that's great. So he starts walking down the dirt road home. And as he's walking down the dirt road, he notices a girl about his age coming toward him the opposite direction. And they both just happen to turn at the curve, and they find themselves walking together down the road. And so the boy decides he's going to begin a conversation. He says, hi. She says, hi. And he says, what are you doing? She said, well, I'm walking home from church. What are you doing? I'm walking home from church. He said, which church you go to? She said, I go to the Catholic church. He said, I go to the Lutheran church. Well, as they're walking along, they come to a spot in the road with a huge puddle. It had rained the night before, and there was no way that they could get around it without getting either wet or really muddy. And the little girl said, my mom is going to get mad at me if I get my clothes dirty. And the little boy said, yeah, my mom too. And they stood there, what do we do? And finally, the little girl said, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to take all my clothes off. I'm going to hold them on top of my head. I'm going to walk through that puddle. Little boy said, that is a great idea. So they both strip naked. They're holding their clothes up on top of their head. They walk through the puddle. They're taking a few minutes to dry off. The little boy looks her up and down one time, and he says, wow, I didn't realize there was such a big difference between Lutherans and Catholics. If you take the clothes off a boy and a girl, you notice immediately something's different. If you take the clothes off of our brains, you'll find that there are also some differences. In fact, there are over 100 differences between a boy brain and a girl brain. Now, there's a lot of similarities, but it's those differences that make a difference. So I want to give you just a few insights into the brains of girls, and then we'll do a little bit with boys too, to help set the context for the gifts that I think our girls need as they move into the 21st century. First of all, girls process life on both sides of the brain, and they process it verbally and emotively. And so what that means is when girls go through an experience or an event, they remember it both in words and in emotions. And so they process everything verbally and emotively in the way that they live life. So, for example, if a girl has a problem, most of the time, now we're speaking generalities, but most of the time, when a girl has a problem, what she wants to do is talk it through. She wants to verbalize it. And it's through the verbalizing that oftentimes she can come to a resolution. Where a guy wants to internalize it, a girl will tend to process it verbally and emotively and go into great detail. If she's stressed out, the same thing. She'll want to talk about it. She'll want to get it out in words. Now, this is a very, very healthy way to process stuff. But for girls, there's a downside, and it's called the rumination cycle. And what can happen sometimes in the lives of our girls is if they've got a problem or they're stressed out, they'll start talking about it, and then they'll talk about it again, and they'll just keep going. They'll just get in this loop, this rumination loop, where they just say the same thing over and over and over again with more descriptive words, with more words and more emotions. So at some point, those of us who love our daughters have to listen and then sort of lovingly dive in and say, okay, I want you to pause here because here's what I think you're saying. And then you say, now, is that what you said? And then, of course, they'll start the loop again, at which point you need to dive in a little bit and say, all right, here's what I think you're saying. If that's correct, now, what are we going to do about it together? Or they'll just stay in the loop, all right? So the positive, this is a good way to get stuff out. The negative that is that for girls, they can get into a rumination loop. Secondly, girls are made up primarily of two hormones, oxytocin and estrogen. These are bonding chemicals. And so when a girl, let's say, is stressed out, what she wants to do is enter into a relationship. She wants to tend and befriend. Her chemicals reach out and crave a relationship. Boys move into fight or flight. Girls move into tend and befriend. And so the positive for our girls is they tend to be good at relationships. They have a lot of relational capital. They get into relationships when they're hurting. The downside for our girls is that they can overthink relationships and overstress about relationships. And if you've raised a daughter, you probably had this happen. Mom, I texted Allie 30 seconds ago, and she hasn't texted me back. I wonder if there's something wrong. I wonder if she's mad at me. I wonder what I did to make her mad at me. I wonder who else is mad at me. You know, nobody else has answered my text in the last 15 seconds. Who else is angry with me? Now, we laughingly call this girl drama. But girl drama is a brain thing. And girl drama in the brain can have some positives because it can help them sort through relationships, but it can also be a negative if they begin to overthink their relationships and overanalyze them and stress out about them. Thirdly, people who are wired to be verbally emotive, i.e. girls, tend more than boys to root their self-esteem in their appearance and in their body image. And this is going to be nothing new for all of you women who are here and for those of you who've raised girls. And one of the things that we're working hard on in our culture is to try to convince our daughters that it's not about what you look like on the outside, it's about who you are on the inside. And we've had a number of people, particularly celebrities lately, who've been trying to pass along this message. It's not what you are on the outside, it's who you are on the inside. That's a part of the story. But for our daughters, they need something a little bit more. And I think part of that is we need to move from self-esteem to health esteem. And to begin to ask our girls questions. What are the things that you like to do that make you feel good when you're moving your body, whatever that is for you? What do you like to do that energizes you, that's physical for you? What kinds of foods do you like to eat that make you feel good about yourself? What kinds of books do you like to read that make you feel like you're really learning something? What are the things that you can do mentally, emotionally, physically, and spiritually to be healthy? And when we help our daughters focus on health, the body image stuff, the self-esteem stuff tends to take care of itself. So we want to begin to invite our daughters into good health esteem, thinking through all the various aspects of their lives, especially as they move into the teenage years. So those are just a few insights on our daughters. And you probably knew all of these things intuitively if you've raised them. Hopefully I've put a little bit of language to them. So what I want to do is take those things now and focus a little bit on some of the challenges that our daughters face in the 21st century. And I want to introduce one of them to you by reading you a little story. My friend Michael Gurian, who's going to be with us tomorrow, has been working for over 30 years, particularly with educators, using brain science to help us understand how boys learn and how girls learn. And in this book called The Minds of Girls, which just came out a month ago, Michael tells a story. He was doing a session, and during the breaks, he always invites people to come. And particularly if they disagree with something he said or they have questions. He loves to talk to people. He thinks the best way for us to learn is to have discussion, even to argue nicely once in a while, to figure things out together. So he had said something in his one of his sessions, and there were two female educators who were upset with what he had said. And so I want to read for you a little bit of their conversation, because it says some things about some of the challenges our daughters face today. So he doesn't give us their real names, but the teachers here he uses are Marissa and Dana. And so Marissa began the conversation. She said, "Dana and I just want you to know we don't want to argue. We want to build a cohesive, friendly, and non-aggressive community in our school, so we don't want to argue with you. We want to discuss." "My face," said Dr. Green, "showed some surprise as I saw these women weakening, not strengthening their position. Don't you use debate and argument in your classes?" I asked. Marissa shook her head. "Some teachers do, but we really want to create cohesion for our girls." At the repetition of this justification, my antennae went up. "If you're afraid to teach healthy argument to girls," I suggested, "aren't you passing some fear and weakness into girls?" They shook their heads in the negative. "No," Dana said, "we're teaching them to insist on a comfortable environment where their voices will be heard." "But since they generally can't control environments around them," Gurian said, "how do you develop resilience and grit in them? How do you help them compete?" Marissa insisted, "arguments can hurt feelings, and we want our girls to feel comfortable and accepted. That's why we discuss, not argue." "Acceptance is great," I argued gently, "but I guess we just disagree on methodology. It seems to me, by holding the stance you're holding, you're feeding right into the very thing the tech and engineering corporations are asking us to stop doing with girls, raise them in a bubble. The workplace needs women and men to be able to argue and hold their own in a complex adult environment. The world needs resilience from girls. It needs grit." This discussion continued as Marissa and Dana insisted that the way to create high self-esteem in girls was with comfort. Feeling uncomfortable was a bad thing. Now, the reason why I read this for you is because our daughters are growing up in a world of mixed messages. On the one hand, we want to empower our daughters. We want our daughters to know that they're equal to men. We want our daughters to know that they have incredible capacity to do great things, that they're growing up in a world of unprecedented opportunities, and the world is really at their doorstep. We want our girls to be strong and resilient. And yet at the same time, there seems to be a sense that we need to protect our daughters. And one of the growing sins in our culture today is to make a girl feel uncomfortable. And I'm not talking about uncomfortable when they're in danger. I'm talking about being uncomfortable with an idea they disagree with. And so on college campuses all across our country, we're now creating safe zones, particularly for girls, so that if a teacher or a lecturer says something they disagree with and they feel uncomfortable, they can leave the room and go to a safe place. Because apparently, these professors don't think our daughters are resilient enough to handle an idea they disagree with, that they're not tough enough, they're not strong enough. And so our daughters are getting two messages. One is, we want you to be empowered, but the other is, we need to bubble wrap you to protect you from ever feeling uncomfortable. And if we want our daughters to be strong, resilient, empowered women, they cannot be protected from the discomforts of life. Life just makes you uncomfortable. And we want to teach our daughters, again, I'm not talking about when they're in danger, we want to teach our daughters to be able to handle with resiliency and with compassion and with grace the various discomforts that they experience in life. The other thing that they're being taught on college campuses is this, that men are 100% responsible for any miscommunication in heterosexual relationships, and girls bear absolutely no responsibility for any miscommunication at all. Now, I'm a man, but I'm also the father of a daughter and two granddaughters. And if we're teaching our daughters that to feel uncomfortable is a sin and they can blame men for everything, they're never going to grow up to be empowered, resilient women. And I don't think that's what you want for your daughters, because I haven't met anybody who wants that for their daughters. And yet right now, that's the cultural ideology that our girls are being raised with. So I want to share with you some things that our daughters do need to help them become resilient, to be the women that God created them to be. And I want to do that based on the story that many of you are familiar with, the story of Esther. Esther was a Jewish woman living in the Empire of Persia. And in that day, women had no power at all. Men ruled everything, and the only thing that women could do was what men told them to do. And if a woman tried to stand up to her husband, if a woman tried to press the boundaries of society, she was immediately dealt with because women had their place, and it was wherever men told them to be. And so the start of the book of Esther, for those of you who know the story, it starts out with a woman trying to gain some power. The king of Persia asked his wife publicly to do something, and she dissed him publicly, refused to do it. And so the king and all of his advisors got together, and they said, look, we've got to do something because otherwise she's going to inspire all the other wives throughout the empire to stand up their husbands. We can't have that happen. And so they immediately exiled her, and she was no longer allowed to be the queen. So several months later, the king was lonely. He needed a wife, and so they did a search throughout the entire Persian Empire. Long story short, Esther, this Jewish young woman, was chosen to be the new queen of Persia. A few months later, one of the advisors of the king had a run-in with a Jewish man, happened to be Esther's uncle, which nobody knew at the time. And he was mad at the Jews, and he had the king issue an edict that all the Jews be annihilated. So Uncle Mordecai came to Esther. Now, Uncle Mordecai raised Esther. He was her father because her parents had died. And he begged her to go to the king in order to save her people. But she said, there's nothing I can do. I'm powerless. I cannot, by law, go to the king. Because if I do, if I go to the king unsummoned, I can be killed. And if I do go to the king unsummoned, and then he doesn't invite me into the throne room, I will be killed. There's nothing I can do. And Uncle Mordecai said, first of all, don't think you're going to get away with this. Because when they find out you're Jewish, you'll be dead too. And secondly, could it be that you were put in this position for such a time as this? And so she told Mordecai to go back to the Jewish community and have them pray for her. And a couple days later, she went to the king. He invited her in, and she told her story. And as a result, the Jewish people were spared because that powerless woman received some profound gifts that forged grace and grit in her life, and these are the gifts our daughters need. So first of all, here's what Esther had and what our daughters need. She was a part of a community of resilient faith. She was raised in a Jewish home. And so she heard the stories again and again about how God, the creator of the universe, had chosen her people. Out of all the peoples in the world, God had chosen her people to be their God, and they would be his people. And he chose them simply as an act of grace because he loved them and he chose them for the sake of the world. And she grew up hearing stories about this God and all that this God had done for her people. These were a resilient people, and it was their faith that created this sense of God's grace in her life that led ultimately to her standing up for her people. She also had a community of faith praying for her when she needed them. And one of the great gifts that our churches offer to our daughters, our girls, is we can be that community of resilient faith for them. To surround them in prayer, to care for them, to make sure that our churches are doing whatever we can together to help our daughters follow Jesus and be the women God created them to be. And it was that resilient community that was able to be her foundation as she took this great risk of her life to save her people. Secondly, she had a family that loved her and invested in her. Now, in this case, it was her uncle, Mordecai. He was sort of her father figure. And so he was there for her, and he loved her. He cared for her. He raised her. He nurtured her. He challenged her when she needed to be challenged. I'm guessing that they had arguments once in a while, and she learned how to argue. And it was his involvement in her life that gave her some stability. Now, those of you who are still parents know that we live in a day where we have overscheduled our kids and we live in this hyperactive world. And we are running from this event to that event to this event to that event only to get home at 9 o'clock at night and still have 2 hours of homework to do And then you got to go to bed and sleep for 4 hours so you can begin the cycle all over again. And our kids are worn out. We're worn out as parents. But more crucially, there are certain things when it comes to building resiliency in our daughters that can only happen in the home. For example, one of the best ways to raise good, strong kids is to have family meals together. And yet all too often, we're eating McDonald's in the car on the way from soccer practice to flute lessons. We need to be able to spend time in our families learning how to live in relationship with each other, learning how to argue in a good way, and learning how to listen and how to feel uncomfortable and to deal with that. To pray together, to talk about faith together. Those are things that only happen in the home. And so one of the calls for us as parents who are raising daughters is to really take that hard look and say, what is it my daughter needs to be the woman God created her to be? And how do we begin to peel away some of the layers of her busy life, if she's overly busy, so that we can really root her again back in the home where life is really nurtured? And then finally, she had a vision for her life poured into her. When she was afraid to go to the king, it was her uncle, her father figure's words, maybe you were put in this position for such a time as this, that finally gave her that grit she needed to stand up for her people and fight for them. If you're a parent, if you're a grandparent, if you're an uncle, if you're an aunt, if you're an educator, if you're influencing girls in any way at all, we have this great privilege to continually pour a vision into them, to see their gifts, to see their talents and call them out. Say, look at what God just did through you. Or look at this. Man, this is great. I wonder if God is calling you to do this, or maybe God's calling you to think about that. It's when our daughters have a group of people around watching her grow and developing her gifts that we begin to develop that grit and resiliency that she can be the person God created her to be. After all, your daughter was created in the image of God. That says something pretty important. And so we want our daughters to understand that, to understand that they're loved passionately by the Creator, that they're loved by us, the church, they're loved by parents and grandparents. And it's that love, it's that gift of grace that will help our daughters become all that we want them to be. So that's all I'm going to say about girls, because I have just a few minutes and I'll talk about boys. Before we do that, we're going to take a commercial break, all right? Because any good speaker is going to hawk his wares, but I'm going to hawk my wares for a reason. A lot of the stuff that Michael and I talk about, once you read it, you say, well, duh. But until you read it, you're not thinking about it. And so I recognize that 20 minutes on girls can't give you everything you need to know about your daughters, and 20 minutes on boys can't give you everything. So we do have some resources that we want to invite you to take home. If you've got a boy or a girl in your life, a grandson, a granddaughter, if you're educating, coaching, whatever it might be. And so let me just quickly tell you what these books are. Jeff will be in the back. And be happy to answer more questions. So the first one's The Minds of Girls. This is by Dr. Gurian. He wrote a book about 15 years ago called The Wonder of Girls. And what this does now is it takes all the latest brain science and puts it all together for you. And Michael is really convinced that when we talk about boys and girls, we have to start with how they're created. Too often our discussions start culturally, and then that becomes ideological. We need to understand how God created us. Equal but different, male and female. And when you start with the brain, then you can make other decisions about how you'll do nurture and how the culture works. So The Minds of Girls is the first book. The second one that Michael wrote is called Saving Our Sons, which came out last year. Same deal. Brain science research, the latest in brain science research. Everything you need to know about boys, the challenges our boys face in the 21st century, and how we can surround them with good people to help them out. I wrote a book a few years ago. The statistic that got me started in the boy stuff was this. 70 to 90% of all boys will leave the Christian church in their teens and 20s, and most won't come back. Now, if that stat holds true, in about 10, 15, 20 years, most of our churches will be mostly female. As a grandpa, as a dad of a boy and some grandsons, that's not good enough for me. And so I did some study, I did some research along with Michael, and I wrote a book called Searching for Tom Sawyer, How Parents and Congregations Can Stop the Exodus of Boys from Church. And this speaks to parents, it speaks to church leaders about how together, in a partnership, parents and churches can build a church that not only keeps our boys, but calls our boys to follow Jesus into the manhood that God created them for. And then the final one, for those of you who maybe are in a church or in a Sunday school setting, I wrote a book. It's just a brief book, a story of kind of our church. We dropped Sunday school after we did some really some research on what Sunday school does to our children. And I'm talking about churches where they have worship and Sunday school at the same time so that kids never go to worship. And so this book is called Sunday Schooling Our Kids Out of Church. And how over the last 60 years we've lost children because they've been in Sunday school, never went to church, and then when they became adults, they never went to church because they never went to church as kids. So if you're one of those churches and you're saying, I can't agree with that at all, it's only $5. And you can read it and then you can throw it away. All right? Only $5. All right. Can we talk about boys for a few minutes? I want to say again that it's not that girls aren't important, and obviously I think they are, but nobody's talking about boys in our culture. And so what I want to do is to begin the conversation with you about our boys and why things are happening that maybe we haven't quite seen but we know intuitively is going on. So I don't know, Jeff, do you have the picture of, okay, so that's my son. And this is, we climbed the bridge in Sydney Harbor. We both spent an hour and a half debating whether or not we were going to do it because we both are afraid of heights. And finally, it was his wife who said, just man up and do it. Well, get right, guys, then we had to do it. And she didn't because she was pregnant, so that was her excuse. But we did it, and we were glad we did. And then these are my grandsons. And you can see it's a very different picture than with my granddaughters. So with my granddaughters, I said, hey, let's take a picture. And they just go right into grandpa's arms. I said, my grandsons, let's take a picture. And they're climbing all over me. And so that already gives you a little insight into boys. About 5 or 6 years ago, a group of us in Phoenix, Arizona, were getting together to host the first Helping Boys Thrive Summit. I called a friend of mine who worked in the government at that time and asked if he had some government people that he could bring along, some government agency representatives that he could bring along to this meeting. And so it was me and it was my friend Chuck, and then the rest of the people there were women who worked in the government, all of them from agencies that had to do with girls and women. Nothing for boys. And they were very excited about this because they recognized as leaders that there were some challenges with our boys. But after the meeting, I pulled Chuck aside. I said, is there any agency in the Arizona government that works exclusively on issues of boys and men? And he said, none. He said, oh, I'm sorry, there is one. Corrections. And that's it. For the last 50 to 60 years, our boys have essentially been sidelined in culture. And it didn't happen intentionally. 50 to 60 years ago, we in this society recognized that our girls were dramatically behind our boys in education and behind our boys in every other area of life. And so we made a decision collectively, with a huge sum of money put in by the U.S. government, we made the decision we were going to roll up our sleeves, we were going to get our girls caught up. In 1982, our girls caught up to boys in our education system and then flew past them. But the storyline that our boys are fine and our girls are in trouble was now in cement. And here we are, 60 years since we started that revolution and all these years since 1982. And since 1982, our boys have fallen dramatically behind girls in every area of education, from preschool through graduate school. And yet, the storyline in our culture, to the detriment of our boys, is our boys are fine, our girls need our help. So what I want to share with you a little bit is our boys are not fine. Our boys are in deep, deep trouble. 70% of all D's and F go to our boys. Only 40% of the A's go to our boys. Girls, 60% of college campuses now are made up of girls. They're graduating at far greater rates. Young adult women are now making more money than young adult men because they're better educated. So there are a lot of good things happening for our daughters, a lot of not so good things happening for our sons. What I want to do is kind of take a big cultural look at part of what's going on. My friend Michael Green in his book wrote this. He says, in 30 years of working with children, I've never been more worried than I am right now for our sons. Some boys are doing very well, but millions are disappearing into violence, imprisonment, social withdrawal, listlessness, virtual worlds, and real-life self-destruction. If we don't end this national pattern, our boys and young men will become increasingly destructive both to others and to themselves, because nearly every social problem we face in civilization today, unemployment, income inequality, incarceration rates, religious extremism, domestic abuse, mental illness, healthcare inequities, and painful violence against women, intersects in some way with the state of boyhood in America. For almost 60 years, no one has been talking about boys. But now, if you've been watching the news, you know that our boys are a hot topic again, for all the wrong reasons. Because of the Me Too movement and the Parkland shooting in particular, people have now been asking the question nationally, what's wrong with our boys? And if you paid any attention at all to the answers they're giving, these answers are not only damning to our boys and those of us who raised them, but what I want to suggest is that they're all wrong, and that there are better answers to what's happening with our boys and what we can do about it. I want to give you a couple examples of some of the storyline we're hearing today about our boys. This first quote was written in USA Today in December. The Me Too movement was just beginning to gain some energy, and they were doing some stories on it. And Jennifer Burdahl was quoted. She is a professor up in Canada. She actually studies sexual harassment, not by men, but of men who are sexually harassed. But this was her quote. She said, males learn a sense of superiority over females from the time they are children. Being a man means being superior to a woman and dominating women sexually or otherwise. Sexual harassment is taking that thinking to an extreme. Men are socialized from the age of 3 to think of themselves as being a real man defined as dominating women. All right, now I want to tease that out for you. First of all, as a father, as a grandfather, of a daughter and granddaughters, I am one of those men who applauds those brave women who have stood up to these monsters masquerading as men, who have been standing against power and the abuse of power and even the dark side of masculinity. There's no place for sexual harassment, and men and women, we're called to join together to make sure that that doesn't happen to our daughters. What troubles me about this particular comment is that she takes a small group of guys and then says that all men are like this. And if you notice what she said males. She didn't say some, a small segment. She said all males from the age of 3 are raised to dominate women. All right, so let's check that out. How many of you parents raised a boy or are raising a boy? And how many of you intentionally raised them to dominate women? Show of hands. All right, I'm going to guess 2 or 3 of you just because you're too shy to say it and admit it, all right? All right, did you notice nobody raised their hands here? So that means not all boys were raised to dominate women. And by the way, who are the primary influencers of boys up through 6th grade? Women, right? Moms, grandmas, and almost every educator our boys have from preschool through at least 6th grade would be women. So if what she says is true and boys are raised to dominate women from the age of 3, then women, you're teaching us to do that. Now, how many of you women are intentionally teaching your boys to dominate women? You're not. But this is a national storyline. This is what people are starting to believe about our boys, that all boys, by virtue of being male, are growing up to be predators. Here's another quote. Patriarchy demands of all males that they engage in acts of psychic mutilation, that they kill off the emotional part of themselves. If an individual is not successful in emotionally crippling himself, he can count on patriarchal men to enact rituals of power that will assault his self-esteem. Now again, she didn't say some males, she didn't say a lot of males, she said all males are taught by men to stunt their emotional growth. Folks, it's just not true. It's not true at all. But what she's done is she's painted in these big, broad strokes, and what that does is it devalues our boys, it devalues our young men, and it devalues all of us who are parenting these boys to become good men. because male or female, we're blamed in this. And so here's what's happening for our boys. They're growing up in a culture where they're being told that by virtue of being male, they're toxic. They're flawed. They're predators. All they think about all day long is how they can harass women. That's what they're being taught. And by the way, so are our girls. I read an article the other day by a man who says that male toxicity is the reason why people aren't vegans. So, man, you've just been blamed for everything just by virtue of being male. Now, we scratch our heads at that, but that's the major storyline in media and in culture today, that boys, masculinity is toxic, and every boy is being raised to dominate women and be a sexual predator. So if you're a boy and you're being raised to believe that, you do one of two things. You check out or you become overly aggressive. And we're seeing far too many of our young men in their 30s and 40s still living in mom's basement, metaphorically speaking, because they've been told they're worthless and they're flawed. Or we have too many males who are acting out aggressively because they're being taught you're no good. And that anger is not their fault. It's our fault for telling lies about boys and believing lies about boys. So here's the truth about boys. Boys were created in the image of God, male. Now, whatever that means, it means that masculinity is somehow in some way rooted in God, the Creator. That God created masculinity as a sacred gift. It is not toxic. It is sacred. And just as the world needs the feminine, the world needs the masculine to thrive and survive and grow. Masculinity is not toxic. It is a sacred gift from our Creator to build a great world. But what boys need is for people to help them harness that energy for good purposes, because it can get away from them if we're not careful. So here are three gifts that our boys need that come from our church, that come from us, three gifts that our boys need. All right. Jeff, you want to put the first one up on the screen for me? It's already up there. There it is. All right. Masculine energy. Now, what I want to talk about in these three gifts, I'm going to focus mainly on you guys. All right, and there's a reason for that, and hopefully that'll become clear. Women, boys desperately need you, all right? But they really need men. It takes men to shape boys into men. So I want to say some things to men, but women, I want you always to hear in the background, you are vital to our boys, and I'll try to say that a few times yet. So they need masculine energy. Here's what I mean by masculine energy. Boys need a lot of men in their lives, a lot of good men, to show them what it looks like to be a man. And I mean a good man. To show them what character looks like, what service looks like, what passion looks like, what purpose looks like. Our girls have a lot of role models when they're growing up. Even though dads are far more involved than ever before, moms are still the primary caregivers. We talked about how most of their teachers are female. They've got a lot of good role models in their teachers. There's a lot of great advocates in popular culture today advocating for girls. Boys don't have a lot of great role models. And the one role model that they need most of all is dad. Father is extremely important, even though society tries to tell us that they're not. There's a new book that just came out called The Boy Crisis by Warren Farrell. And Warren says this about boys. Let me get my notes up here. And their need for dad. He says, without dads as role models, boys' testosterone is not well channeled. The boy experiences a sense of purposelessness, a lack of boundary enforcement, rudderlessness, and often withdraws into video games and video porn. At worst, when boys' testosterone is not well challenged by an involved dad, boys become among the most destructive forces. When boys' testosterone is well challenged by an involved dad, boys become among the world's most constructive forces. Dads are crucial in the life of a boy, but we also live in a society where dads aren't always around. And we've got these great moms who are doing the best that they can to raise their boys. And so when dad's not around, these boys still need a man to speak life into them, to help channel that testosterone, that energy, to use it for good and noble purposes. And that's why boys desperately need men. And that's one of the reasons why I'm convinced that the greatest institution on the planet when it comes to raising boys and girls is the Christian church. because it's got good guys there. And these good guys are sick of just setting up chairs and passing out bulletins. They want a vision for their life. And guys, you want a vision for your men's group? A men's group exists for one reason, to shape boys into men. And if your men's group isn't doing that, you're not doing your purpose. Bible studies are great, but if you haven't found a way to connect with boys in your church, you're missing out on your primary call as a men's group. So our boys need masculine energy. All right? Secondly, our boys need, I've got to get my note here. Oh, a blessing. All right. So boys need from, and I'm going to start with dads again. Boys need from their dad to hear these four words. I'm proud of you. I'm proud of you. And if boys don't hear that from their dad, that they grow up what we call a father wound, they live with that emptiness for the rest of their lives. That pride, that word of pride, is the lifeblood of a boy. Now, some boys are wise, and if they don't have their father's blessing, they'll find it from another man. But most boys are not that wise, and so they'll fill that emptiness with something else, usually destructive. Tim Madigan was a very successful journalist, and he became friends with Fred Rogers, Mr. Rogers. And he wrote a book about it called I'm Proud of You, My Friendship with Mr. Rogers, or with Fred Rogers. And shortly after they met, Tim went through a series of personal crises. His life was falling apart, started doing some self-reflection, and came to the realization that the core reason for his life's problems was that his dad never said, I'm proud of you. And so this is the letter that he wrote to Mr. Rogers. This is the question I have for you this morning, Fred. Will you be proud of me? It would mean a great deal to me if you would. During our brief time together, you have done so much to teach me how to be a person and a man, and now I have this favor to ask of you. Will you be proud of me? Now, can you hear the little boy in that grown, successful journalist man wanting his dad to be proud of him and asking for it from another man? Every boy, every man needs to hear from dad or significant male, I'm proud of you. And if he doesn't, he lives the rest of his life trying to fill that hole. And usually it'll be with stuff that hurts him and his family. If dad's not around, if you're a single mom or you know single moms, then the first thing that you want to do when you leave here today is start thinking about and praying about who is that one man in my son's life that my son looks up to. And then put a little bug in that guy's ear and say, would you tell my son you're proud of him? Would you just get down and look him right in the eyes and say, I'm proud of you? And guys, if you go to a church, I hope you'll look at the boys in your church and you'll catch them doing something great and you'll tell them about it. Man, when you open that door for that guy, that was awesome. You're going to be a great man someday. When you did that thing, when you said that thing, and let's catch our boys doing something great and let's let them know that we're proud of them. Even Jesus needed to hear, I'm proud of you, from his Father twice before he finally went to the cross. If Jesus needed it as a man, our boys need it. And then finally, what our boys need is a challenge, and I'll wrap up with this. Our boys are growing up in a purpose void because they're being told they're toxic. So if you're told you're toxic all the time, that you're flawed, that you're just a sexual predator, you're not going to know what your purpose is in life. So you're just going to retreat inward. And so our call as moms and dads, as people who love boys, is to give them a purpose. And that's what David did for his son Solomon. As David was reaching the end of his life, he called his son Solomon in because Solomon was going to be the new king, and he poured these words into him. He said, show yourself to be a man. Now, this wasn't some patriarchal chant. He wasn't saying, I want you to go out there, and I want you to climb the corporate ladder, and I want you to work so hard you ignore your kids, and I want you to abuse as many women as you possibly can. That's not what he was saying. He was blessing him by saying, be bold and courageous. Show the world the good stuff you're made of. What he was doing was he was inviting his son Solomon to root his purpose as a man in the grace of God, to root his character as a man in the grace of God, to root his values and his sense of service in the grace of God. As Christians, we would say to our sons, follow Jesus. Pledge your sword to him. Pledge allegiance to him. Follow Jesus. Jesus, by his grace, will mold you and shape you into the man that you were created to be. Or to quote a dad from a brand new TV show I've been watching called The Dangerous Book for Boys, this dad says to his sons, I want you to be dangerously good. Isn't that great? That's such good boy language. I want you to be dangerously good. And that's what I pray for your sons, and that's what I pray for your daughters. And so now as you go, may our loving Lord bless you and keep you. May the Lord make his face smile upon you and be gracious to you. And may the Lord always turn his face toward you and give you peace as you raise your boys and as you raise your daughters. In the name of the Father and of the Son, the Holy Spirit. Amen. Thank you so much for your time. I hope you'll come tomorrow. It's going to be good.